Hello, everybody. Before we dive into today's episode, we are brought to you by Elite Sweets. Elite Sweets is redefining the way we think about sweets with their elite donuts. The Elite Donut is a better-for-you donut that is packed with 13 grams of protein, gluten-free, keto-friendly, and contains only 1 gram of sugar. As I'm recording this today, Elite Sweets recently came out with their new shelf-stable donut. So the donuts that we all love from Elite Sweets are now shelf-stable. You no longer have to put them in the fridge or freeze them. You can keep them right there in your pantry, bring them with you on the go, and they're good to go. I love Elite Sweets. They are always packed at our house, ready to go for a snack that is indulgent, but it doesn't ruin all of the hard-earned work you're doing outside the kitchen. Again, it's high in protein, gluten-free, keto-friendly, and contains only 1 gram of sugar. They have a new flavor, maple, which is delicious. You can get yours today at elitedonut.com or on Amazon, the two easiest places to get the donuts. By using code ShaneWhite30, you'll also get 30% off your order. They're also popping out into retail, so keep an eye out right as of today, filming this before the podcast. They're in 7-Eleven in the Dallas area, so if you're listening to this from Dallas, you can head over to 7-Eleven and pick up some Elite Donuts for yourself. Like I said, they're delicious. Give them a shot. Use code ShaneWhite30 for 30% off your order at elitedonut.com or on Amazon. We're also brought to you by Routine. When we sleep, we lose between a pound and 1.5 pounds of water from expelling vapors, sweating, for lots of different reasons, mainly from sweating. When you wake up in the morning, you have the cup of coffee. First thing you do, you just dehydrate yourself even further. So why not use a product like Morning Routine? It's a single serve packet that contains half an organic lemon, 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar, Himalayan sea salt, all 6 essential electrolytes, and most importantly, no sugar. I tear one of these, mix it into a little cup of water, usually with my pre-workout or something first thing in the morning. I genuinely feel more hydrated, more vibrant, more ready to go for the day once I have my morning routine. It is really strange. It's one of those products that if I don't use it consistently, I do genuinely feel a major difference in just the way I feel throughout my morning and ultimately my day. So check out Morning Routine. If you want to give it a shot, go to their website, yourroutine.com. Use code ShaneWhite30 at checkout for 30% off your first order. We're also brought to you today by NeuroRoast. NeuroRoast is a company dedicated to helping you optimize your brain function and overall well-being. NeuroRoast's flagship product is their premium mushroom coffee, which is made with an organic single origin coffee and their signature blend of 5 different functional mushrooms: cordyceps, lion's mane, reishi, turkey tail, and chaga. Mushroom coffee is a new and exciting way to supercharge your day. Unlike regular coffee, which can cause jitters and crashes, mushroom coffee provides a more balanced and sustained energy boost, allowing you to stay focused and productive throughout the day. And with NeuroRoast's ground and instant coffee options, you can enjoy the benefits of mushroom coffee wherever and whenever you need it. And here's some great news for my listeners today. NeuroRoast is offering an exclusive discount code just for you. If you want to use code ShaneWhite during checkout at NeuroRoast.com, that's NeuroRoast.com, you can get 30% off your order. Whether you choose ground or instant options, they're all available for you. And again, that's code ShaneWhite30 for 30% off your order at NeuroRoast.com. So if you're looking for a natural and delicious way to boost your focus, memory, and overall cognitive function, give NeuroRoast Mushroom Coffee a try. With their commitment to quality and sustainability, you can trust that you're getting the best possible coffee for your brain and your body. And again, one last time, don't forget to use the code ShaneWhite30 at checkout to save 30% off your order. For all of you listening today, I will add the links for NeuroRoast, Routine, and Elite Sweets to the show notes. So go there, click on the links, and don't forget to use the discount code to get some percentages off. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. The episode is up next. I never asked anybody. Well, Adam, welcome to the show, my friend. We're just going to hit record and go. What's going on, buddy?
Not a whole lot. Have an off week this week. I'm not in the Masters, so it's just spending a week here in Vincennes, Indiana. Not
Can I
I'm just
tell you
hanging.
the funniest? Can I tell you the funniest truth that I had when we were texting back and forth and we were trying to figure out a time? You said you had an off week. It never occurred to me that this was Masters week, and I was like, because it was so funny when you texted me that. I saw someone post something about the Masters. I was like, wait, shit. I wonder if Adam. I don't know how that process works. So I'd love to ask you because you had been close to getting in,
If
didn't
I would
you?
have won Valspar, I would have been in. They do a couple different qualifications. So it's top 50, I believe, at the end of the year, world rankings, and then it's top 50 2 weeks or a week before. 2 weeks before, I think. And I did not qualify for either of those. And if you win a full field tournament, that also gets you in. And the Valspar was a full field tournament. So that would have gotten me into the Masters. But it's okay. My
You'll
wife is 30
get there.
pregnant, so
I was gonna say that was the first thing I wanted to ask once we got on here is how's she doing? I was so fired up that she was able to come down and see you, but I was like, oh, she is late in this
she is
game.
late, and that was like the last time she could fly, with the airline, with like the public airlines. If she would have had to travel again, it would have had to be like privately, and that is so much money that probably wouldn't happen. And I think she was 30, were you 35 weeks, babe? 34, 35. But yeah, she caught a 5:15 a.m. flight direct out of Indianapolis. Came down, was there by at our apartment that we rented. 7:45, she was there in the morning.
Oh my
So it
goodness.
was crazy. I was just,
Well, your wife's a saint. That's quite the trip.
what's that?
I said she's a saint. That's quite the trip.
And we had breakfast. It was fun. It was obviously very nice having her there for a fun day, a stressful day. It would have been great to win and have her there on the 18th green, but we'll have AJ next time. And oh, you gotta edit that out because no one knows the name yet, apparently.
I'm gonna mark a clip here so I can edit that little piece out. There we go.
My wife's laughing in the background, telling me she hates.
Oh my God, that's so funny. I literally laughed. I'm like, oh, is that the name? There we go. We'll edit it out. Don't stress.
No, it's fine. But yeah, it'll be hopefully get a win one day, and then it'll be even more special to have both of them there. That's
That's amazing, man.
I let it slip in front of our brother-in-law like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and we're pretty sure he knows. And then she's been dogging on me ever since because we talk about
That's
family
like
so much, and I let it slip. I let it slip all the time.
as soon as you have the name, it's impossible to go back. I noticed that. Like once we landed on a name, it's like you just you it's his name. So it's hard to be like, oh,
We
baby,
talk.
or you know, whatever.
I'm gonna say his name. I'm sorry. I'm not that smart. I can't stop.
Yeah, we're just dumb guys. We can't give us too much credit. I tell my wife that all the time. I'm like, you gotta just always remember I'm a dumb guy at the end of the day. So anything you think I would have done differently, remember, I'm just a dumb dude.
Exactly. I try and fix myself, but sometimes I'm just not fixable. But anyway, I
Right.
try and do my best, and I try not let it slip. But here we are.
That's hilarious, man. That's so funny.
Millions of people that will see this, it's just going to spread.
Well, now that it's the biggest podcast on earth, yeah,
Yes.
this will be
The app's going to be
viral.
game changing. It's going to make all the difference. So, how have you been? How are you going?
I'm good, man. Good. Yeah, dude, it's been a wild year. It's funny having him on. My wife gave birth on January 3rd, so really, like this whole year has just been a change. But it's amazing, man. I would tell you the hardest thing is, I want to spend all day with him. Like truthfully, you see him every time you see him. Now he's getting to the age now. He's just 3 months old. He smiles when he sees me. Like he knows who I am, so he gets really fired up. Yeah. So I would tell you that's the challenge. Is there's just so much going on with work. I try to be really, really, really diligent in the morning with him. That's like my time with him. I try to just be present, and then I try to spend a few little bit here and there during the day when I can, and then at night I try to turn everything off for a few hours because he goes to bed early now. He goes to bed at 7, so I can turn everything back on work-wise after that. So I just try to, every day I think about it as like one day of his little life. I'm like, I got to be as present as I can. It's tough, but it's so fun, man. Oh, sorry, what was
How's he
that?
sleeping?
He's sleeping really good. I feel bad talking about it because he sleeps so good. Now, I will say last night was bad. He didn't do good last night, but he typically now goes, and this has been probably over a month. He goes down around 7. He doesn't wake up till like 5.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I have a few tips and tricks I'll send your way. One of them is just like this special swaddle Kelly found. It's insane. And he, because of that swaddle, he can't move and he just sleeps like a baby. I think that's generally part of it. The other thing is he just likes being full. So as long as we feed him at the end of the night, and then we have like a, we've developed a really diligent routine. It's like specific time, the house gets dark. We start a bath. We give him a bottle, change him, swaddle him. And then the room is pitch black and we got like the sound machine on. It's like the same exact thing every night. I think it just like trains him that, okay, it's time to go to bed. That's helped a lot.
We're going to do some pretty diligent sleep training routines as well, just for traveling on the road and just getting them in that routine at home. And then when we go on the road, that'll allow them to travel with me a little more easily when he's sleeping a little more consistently.
There you go.
I would love all the tips and tricks.
Well, I'll definitely give you any you want. The traveling, is that's going to be interesting. I know we just went to California about a month ago. So he was only a little over two months when we went. And Kelly did her best to just stay on Chicago time when we were there, which meant all of a sudden our dinners were, well, it was funny because we actually went to dinner. We would go to dinner at the hotel restaurant because it was decently nice. And so we would just put him, we'd put him to sleep and then put him in his, like his, we had this like bassinet stroller thing and we flew out there with it. And so he would just go to bed and then we'd go to dinner and he'd just sleep at dinner. Yeah. So we could still do dinner. That's key. So when you travel with him, I would tell you that just like try to keep the times the same, because if you keep the times the same, you can kind of go do stuff a little bit, right?
I would think that's smart. And I mean, obviously, if it's just an hour, that's not a too big of a deal. But California, I'm guessing all of California is 3 hours.
Because you're on Eastern time, right?
Yeah,
3 hours.
We're right on the borderline because Central's so much better.
But it's the best. I love it.
Talk about it all the time, my wife. We don't need to stay in light until 10 o'clock at night in the summer. Or like when we, even now, it's like dark at 8:15, which we're used to it being dark at like 5:30. Just seems like it was dark at 5:30 just a little bit ago. And now you come inside and all of a sudden it's 9:30 and you got to get to bed. So
yeah,
that's for another discussion, but they did not ask my opinion on what time we think what time I think we should be on. So still waiting for that phone call.
The phone call to ask. Yeah, man. No, it's such a, I just tell you to soak it in, man. I know that sounds so cliche, but that's the one thing I've been trying really diligently is just, this is a super goofy one. I don't think I've ever said this before. I have a little notebook on my desk that it's nothing special. It's literally just a little white notebook. And every day I try to just like write one little thing down he did. And it's been funny because it just kind of gets me to stop in the heat of like you, I'm sure you're trying to go to the golf course, trying to take care of the house, take care of the family, the dog. It always allows me every day to just like write one little thing down that he did. And now that he's been alive for 3 months, it's kind of interesting to see like how much stuff it's just, I don't know. It makes you kind of stop and like just smile at the end of the day. And you're sure. Like, oh, this was a good day.
Write a paragraph or sentence or something funny that happened. Yeah. When they get older and start to do some, just start to say some funny stuff. We've got a lot of nieces and nephews and they just say the funniest things.
I'm excited for that. Like I'm excited for every stage, but that when they start saying stuff has to be the best. That's just gotta be so funny. Grayson just did, I don't really understand what I did. He did his first like legit belly laugh yesterday and that was out of nowhere. And like that little thing, like little things like that happen a lot. You'll see like really quick. He'll just do little things.
I like that name. Yeah, that's a cool name.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. AJ's good too. I like that. You don't see that a lot. Is that his actual name or does it stand for two different words?
It's going to be Adam Jr.
Cool. Love it. Well, he's gonna have to get a golf club right away.
We need to name him after me, but my wife's talked me into it and I like it now too, but we're just gonna roll with it. We like it.
I like that. Oh, and I just totally blew your cover again, so I can edit that.
Okay.
No. I didn't even realize that. I'm sorry.
It's fine. Just keep it on the down low with your several watch this.
I know. I will also just say, hopefully the millions of people don't leak this too far. Cool, man. Well, I'm excited for you guys. Let me know. I can't wait to hear how little guy is. And I'm so excited for you guys. It's the best thing ever.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
So I wanted to go back. I mean, I before we hit record, I was saying how cool it was, obviously knowing you since college. I was so pumped for you, man. That was such a cool opportunity. And just being there ready to go on Sunday at the Valspar, that's gotta be something you'll always remember. And obviously you'll have plenty more of those, but what was it like? I mean, you were Remind me too, because I'm horrible at keeping track. I feel like it's funny. Thursday, Friday, I'm so head down with my work that I always look up on Friday afternoon. I'm like, the tournament's half over. But were you in the lead almost the entire week? Or did you, I can't remember what day you broke out.
No, I think I was close to leading after the first day. Maybe close to leading after the second day. I don't exactly remember. I was leading after the third round, I know, by one shot, because Saturday the wind picked up and it played very difficult. I shot one under on Saturday, birdied the last two out of three. Mm-hmm. And I had a one shot lead going into the final round, which I had a putt on the last hole, which got me into the last group with Spieth, which I thought would be a really cool experience. I knew the crowds would come out, obviously, to watch him. I had made a couple jokes. I'm like, you know, there's going to be a shitload of people there tomorrow, and they're all there to watch Jordan Spieth. I mean, it's kind of funny.
Oh, that's not true. But some people definitely wanted to see him, for sure.
There was a couple. I think I won some fans over. But such a cool experience. You never know how many of those opportunities you're going to get in your life. Hopefully there's many more, but that was definitely a cool one. The fairways were lined. It was fast and firm and windy. It played extremely hard. The day went by so fast. Before I could breathe, we were on like through the turn and then on holes 15, 16. But yes, just a really cool experience. And I did a fairly good job of, you know, trying to stop and smell the roses for a second and just take it in, because this is something that I'll always remember.
I will tell you, just watching as a friend, the one thing that they said on the air as well, and then you're like, you know, I have some family that knows that I know who you are and stuff. And everyone that I talked to after that was like, I would tell you, this was 9 out of 10 people, the one thing everyone said, you were the most calm and collected person I've ever seen in that position. Like, seriously, dude. And I'm not blowing smoke. I was impressed. Like, you, I was like, he looks like Adam at Purdue. Like, he's just like walking. Going to the next shot. He doesn't seem stressed. He's like, I'm just out here enjoying the moment, which I thought was cool, super cool.
There was definitely some nerves. It was just, we were so focused on what we were doing, and that sounds so cliche for sports as well, you know, just focus on myself and, you know, worry about what I'm doing and complete my process. But that's just what we were doing, because it was so, the golf course played so tricky in the wind and the firmness. There just wasn't a whole lot of time to, like, really get too caught up in the moment, because twosomes play really fast on the PGA Tour. I feel like you have to run not to get behind. So we were basically running down the fairways, trying to figure out where we're trying to land the ball when we got out of position. When we got out of position, trying to figure out how we're going to make par.
Is it even that way when you're in the last group? Like, do you feel a lot of pressure to keep going quick?
Not maybe so much in the last group, because it's just a little tougher when there's so many people. And like, if you hit a ball offline, you got to move couple hundred people to get them, you know, and then you got to maybe start it more left and curved around the trees, or start it more right. So you have to move all those people that aren't really in the way, but they're in the way of the path your golf ball is going to travel. So that can take some time. But I think there was a couple officials that were with us, and they would help when we were in the trees, and just to help move crowds and just keep things moving as fast as possible. So that.
Wow, I never thought about that. I know, not to totally go off course, I wouldn't say our boy. I didn't know him that well, but I played against him two times. Patrick Rogers on Sunday. Yep. He got some heat. I don't know if you saw that. He took like 15 minutes on 18.
I did.
Yeah, I was like, and then he ended up just hitting it out. I was like, wait, that wasn't, you could have just done that. But
I actually need to text him, because he texted me and said, good playing. And I wanted him to win.
Yeah, I did too.
One of my really good buddies too. So I was really happy to see Corey win, but like, Courtney asked me who I thought was going to win. And, you know, Patrick had maybe a 2-shot lead going into Sunday or something like that. And I'm like, you know, I think maybe Pat gets it done, and I'm sure he's going to get it done at some point. But Corey is a great, great golfer. He's even a better person.
I never, you know, it's funny. I only got to tee up against him. Like, I didn't, but you remember Peyton. Peyton was, he was number one both years we played Avon, because we played them. Peyton. We usually played them once a year. Peyton Mitchell, you remember him from Purdue? He was our number one at Greenwood in high school golf. You what?
I don't remember Peyton Mitchell. Should I?
Yeah, he was at Purdue with us. I don't know if his older brother Corbin, you might have bumped it. He made it to state finals the year Tyler won.
Okay, so you're good friends with him. I would have met him at some point.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you would have met. You probably met him at the apartment at some point, maybe. But either way, it was funny.
Flashed of your apartment for being there and, you know, carrying on all the stuff. I still remember a little bit of it.
Do you? It's funny. A lot of people, for whatever reason, remember our shit. Because we had the shittiest apartment, if you remember. It was like, it was tiny and it was shitty, but it was so fun.
Tiny and shitty as well. So it was. Yeah. And then we moved into a bigger house that was even bigger and even shittier. Way shittier on Ludd Street. It was bad.
And I'm not going to lie. Like, the shitty college housing situation, though, it's just like, you got to do it. It's so fun. The people that had the nice, shiny places in college, I'm like, come on.
I'm sure they had fun, but we got the full experience, I would say. And there was some experience, I'll say. Raccoons under the house or other varmints getting in and scratching, like trying to come up. So there's like a little crawl space down there. And then they set traps. I think we caught like 3 raccoons, a couple possums underneath there. Not every time I'm up at Purdue, but I'm up there 5 or 6 times a year, I'd like to say. 3 or 4 times a year, we'll drive past that Lutz house, and I still have a key to the back door.
You have a key to the back door of that house?
And I think they're supposed to change the locks.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, we were sober. This was many years ago. We went and pulled up at the back. No one was there. This is during the summer. No one's there. And my window worked in the back door.
That is hilarious. That's hilarious that you had the key and you had it on you. Like the
I'm not trying to break and enter anywhere. Maybe, you know, you have to maybe delete this part too for all the millions of followers. I went open. I see if it worked, and it opened the door, and I shut it immediately and like ran off. I just wanted to see if it would still work, and it did.
It'd been funny if you took a video in there and then it went viral, and then the guys are like, damn it, like Adam came to Purdue and I didn't get to say hi. That's funny, man. Purdue, oh man, we could go on forever about stories of Purdue. That's great. To go back though, sorry, I keep thinking of all these funny things to catch up on. So Sunday, I mean, the one thing I thought was super cool, and you just hit on it, was that pretty wild? Was that your first time playing with Jordan in a two-seater?
It was. I played, and this sounds crazy. Maybe not sound crazy. Maybe that's not the right word. I've played with Rahm several times. I've played with Scheffler a couple times, maybe once in a tournament, a couple times in a practice round. Like, I played with Justin in a practice round, not once or twice. Played with DJ 2 or 3 times in practice rounds. But, like, Spieth's the one I've never played with. I wasn't overly intimidated by Spieth, but like he was the person like I'm most intimidated by on the PGA Tour besides Tiger, which is kind of crazy.
Why do you think that is?
Not because of his stature or anything, just because I have never talked to him a ton. I've never been around him a ton, never played with him. Obviously, I have all the respect in the world for him. It's just someone I hadn't been around as much. If I was playing with Tiger, I would have been shitting my pants the whole time, especially at least for the first couple holes. So that would be, it's just kind of funny of my intimidation rankings. It goes Tiger and then Spieth. But he's funny. I mean, he's very talkative on the golf course.
Is he?
We talked a little bit, but he's very talkative to like when he's describing golf shots or like what happened with a golf shot, like borderline, like kind of funny. I mean,
oh, okay.
Like, no, he does it. I mean, I'm sure he knows he does it, but he just doesn't have a filter. He says whatever he's thinking and. Funny to listen to him to explain to Greller, like, all right, this is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to do it. You know, I think I can go over this branch, or I think I can clear that bunker. And anytime he got in a bunker, I thought he was going to make it because he about did every time. Unbelievable.
He's wild from the sand.
Crazy.
That's really interesting. You know, it's funny. This is going to sound so stupid, but obviously it's like anything in life. You and I both played high school golf. Obviously, that's where my career ended. You went on to do, you obviously are doing way bigger, better things. I was watching a TikTok the other day. TaylorMade's doing like a really cool series with Scheffler, and they're like breaking down different shots. And it made me think back, like watching you on Sunday and then like showing different, like, you obviously can hear you. I'm not sure if you've gone back and watched, but you can like hear you and your caddy like breaking down shots. I'm like, what the fuck was I doing in high school? Like, I didn't know. I was just like, how do I not hit it in the water? Like, I mean, genuinely, like the amount of thought that all of you guys put into every shot makes so much sense now that I'm older and I'm a little more wiser, maybe a little bit. And thinking back to when I was trying to be competitive back then, I'm like, I didn't know what I was doing. I was like, how do I like not get a bogey or a triple bogey on this hole and like just try to, you know, save it?
Well, two things. It does get very complicated, but at the same time, try and keep it simple. And half the time I'm trying to figure out, all right, how do I just not hit in the water here? What shot can I hit here that I know has a high probability of not going in the water? I don't know if it's all or fade, you know, what, you know, with my tendencies, with the wind, how I'm swinging that day. Because like on 16, where Spieth hit it in the water, I mean, he hit his worst shot probably all week. It was a terrible shot, not a good shot. It's the right shot. I mean, I don't fade the ball very easily. He tried to hit a fade, and I think he's more of a drawer than a fader, and he didn't pull it off. And I pull out my 2-iron, and I was going to hit like a high little fade. And after seeing his ball, I'm like, I don't know where this ball is going, but I know it's not going right. And I like flip my hands over and hit like a little pull hook in the left trees, but it was not in the water. And I was fortunate enough to make par. But when you say that you were trying not to hit it in the water, that was exactly what I was trying to do on 16. I don't know where it's going, but I know it's not going right. So it's going left.
Which I mean, not to oversimplify, but that's where then, even if I said that, I'd still end up be like, well, fuck, it's still in the water. No, that's really interesting to hear though. Well, cause it's funny because listening to you guys, I mean, you guys are obviously professionals. So there's just so much thought that goes into every shot. And obviously when you're trying to be under par, I mean, every shot's so important, right? Every single shot. And I will tell you, you know, it's funny. I went back and I was looking back through my notes and realized the last podcast we did, you were talking heavily about your putting game. I don't know if you remember this. You were talking about like making or breaking it for you that season was getting your putting game. Like you were doing really well. And then you'd have some tournaments where you kind of had like a little bit of a swing mm-hmm. the other way where you had a bad putting round. You're like, if I can get my putting in, I think I can actually compete and win. And then I was watching you just on Saturday and Sunday. I was like, dude, your putting game has gotten insane. Like, did you spend a lot of time on that, you think, in the last
year? Yes, and it comes and it goes. Like, I'm a streaky putter, which I'd love to say I'm a great putter. I am, and consistent all the time, but that's just not how I've proven to be successful with my putting. And what I mean by that is it's better to be streaky than, like, consistent. Like, if you're just consistently average or just above average the whole time, you'll be just – like statistically with strokes gained, you'll be just above, you know, maybe you'll get like 0.2 strokes a round, which is very good. But when I have great putting rounds, I'll gain 2 to 3 shots a round. And I think maybe I gained maybe 7 shots for the entire tournament. So that gives me 7 shots above the field on putting that week. And I might have another week where I lose, you know, I can't lose 7 shots in putting on a week generally, because if I'm playing that bad, I'm going to miss the cut and only lose like 2 and 3. So it would be 6 or 7 if they let me play the weekend. But what I mean by being streaky is when I gain 7 shots in a week, that gives me a huge advantage. Whereas if I just was always middle of the row, I never get to gain advantage. My ceiling is not as high, but my floor is obviously not as low either. So now with me being consistently streaky in my career with putting, I have a much higher ceiling, but I also have that lower floor sometimes, which is actually the best way to be in golf. I mean, when you play well in golf, you need to play well. And if you play bad, you might as well finish 144th rather than make the cut and finish 50th, because there's not any difference really. Obviously, but like that's where golf's weird. Like you want to be consistent. Obviously you want to make cuts. I do. I hate missing cuts. I'm still pissed at myself. I might be more pissed at myself for how I played and completely gave away 3 or 4 shots at Valero. And this is I'm more mad at myself for missing that cut than I was almost happy for myself in Valspar, which I was very happy, but like I had a week off. I prepared okay. The weather was poor here. I couldn't practice exactly like I wanted to, but I was so upset with myself for giving, because I don't like giving away shots in golf. That's just the one thing that gets me. So I'm still a little upset at my Valero performance, but I mean, that's, you know, that little fire and drive is generally what makes me a good golfer, you know, never being satisfied or, oh, I finished second. That's okay if I missed this cut. Like I'm not that way.
Fuck yeah, man. I love that attitude. I'm not going to lie. I didn't get to watch much of the Valero, but then I looked on, I think it was Friday evening, to see where you were. And I was like, oh, son of a bitch. You missed by one. Yeah. I was like, oh, and I went through and looked at your scorecard and I was like, oh, he's going to be, I actually knew without not knowing you that well, I was like, he's going to be more pissed at this than he was 2 weeks ago.
I was. Had a putt on the last hole and lipped it out. Yeah, I played, sounds crazy to say, I played fine I played barely worse at Valero than I did at Valspar. The putt went in at Valspar and I didn't, you know, I had maybe two silly mistakes at Valero, and, you know, that added up to two or three shots, and not making any putts added up to, you know, four or five shots for.
So you're saying it's better to be aggressive. It's like, honestly, better to be a little more aggressive, even on the putting green.
It can be, yeah, not necessarily aggressive, because there's a stats guy I talked to, Scott Fawcett. Like, if you try and not, like, hey, you know, short putts don't go in. You know, you never make a putt that's short. Well, you never make a putt that's long either. If you hit it too hard, it's not going in either. So, like, you're going to – you just have to – when the putts go in, your confidence gets up. You see a couple go in. It just – things just start to happen. Your confidence goes up. Your feel gets better. You get in the zone. And you just appreciate those times, because they will go. And the bad times will go as well. You know, with anything, you go and win two tournaments in a row, you know, that feeling is going to pass, and you're going to go through another struggle at some point. So, you know, enjoy the good times and the bad times. They're not going to last either. You're going to have, you know, hopefully many more good tournaments after you have, you know, maybe a shit 2 months of golf. So not getting too caught up in good play or bad play, because, you know, like the saying goes, this too shall pass. So
I love that, man. Yeah, no, that's a really good way to put it, bud. That's a really good way to put it. What was crazy to me too, thinking back on that round, was it 12 or 13 that you had the crate? Was it like 78 foot putt you hit?
Yeah,
I think it was 12. One of those two.
Yeah, maybe 13. I don't know the holes exactly. But yes, it was the Hooters hole. That's where all the drinking and partying happened. Hooters.
Oh, is it?
Tables set up everywhere, like a little high rise. And that's where you go to have fun at a golf tournament. You go there, you camp out, you have your bucket of beers, and you have stack them and see how you can get them and all that good stuff. And they were loud. And when the putt was rolling up the hole, it started getting louder and louder. And then obviously I was just trying to putt it within a flag stick. I mean, I was 70 some feet and up over a ridge, and that's our coffee machine saying that.
I was like, oh, is he having an alarm going on?
It is
done out?
Keeping the coffee hot anymore. And it was rolling up just left of it, and I started walking, and I'm like, that breaks right. It's going in, and it did. And I'm like, that's going in, and it did. And someone threw a beer on the green right by.
Oh, did they really?
Yes, right by Speed's coins. If you look at me on, I did see a replay of that on the coverage. I'm like walking up, but then I'm like kind of like throwing my arms, like, what are you doing? Like, he still has to putt. And it was, I don't know if it was in his line, but it was really close. And security, like, I went by security and he said something like, oh, we got like, I don't know exactly. He's got, we got a 101 situation here. I'm like, oh, what's that? Like, you're throwing somebody out? And he's like, yeah. And they're getting arrested.
Oh no. For throwing the beer.
Yeah. Because they knew the guy who threw the beer. But I'm guessing that we would have had security if Spieth wasn't there, but we had extra security because of Spieth. So like, you had guys like clinging to your side, going through that area because of the amount of people that were intoxicated, loud, of not doing silly things.
I never thought about that. Like, people trying to grab you guys and stuff.
What's that?
People trying to like grab you guys or try to get you to sign something.
Like that, but like, just when you got somebody there, you know, a good guy with a gun, no one's going to try.
Yeah.
So, not that.
Damn. I never thought about that at a golf tournament. Is there a lot of security?
Yeah, I don't know. I know there's some undercover guys, but like, big name like Spieth, when you're one of the faces of the game, like, I'm sure he has a couple more people around him at all times, which he has to. I mean, there's crazy amounts of Spieth fans, and, you know, someone gets, you know, 10 beers in them and they want to go do something silly like Jordan. He has to be protected because the amount of people that he's around at all times. People drink and they do stupid things. Strange. It's just weird how that happens. I don't get it.
Well, it's strange, and it's never occurred to me until you just said that that's even something you guys have to think about while you're trying to just fucking play golf and win a tournament. Like, that's crazy to think that, you know, I never thought about it. That's so true. Would you say now that you're like that moment, that experience for you, was there a lot of that kind of stuff that you didn't normally see on tour that was just kind of weird that day?
Not really. I mean, half the time I feel like, sometimes, especially morning rounds on the PGA Tour, in my group, it's like high school golf because there are not many people watching, and that's fine. Like,
it can't be true, really.
If it's a bigger tournament, yeah, there's always people, or maybe a couple hundred people watching, or, you know, a couple thousand people that are sitting on a certain hole, camping out, waiting for, you know, Rory and Spieth and Justin Thomas to come through. but late on the weekends or late on Friday, there's generally a lot of people, no matter who you are. Obviously, the bigger names have even more people. But if you're off at 7 a.m. on a Thursday morning at Valspar, like, there is no one, and there's no one there. Thursday afternoon, a little bit. Friday's when the tournament starts picking up, and that's when you start to buzz.
Got it. That makes sense. So Sunday, I mean, man, I was literally sitting in front of, oh, and by the way, I had to tell you this. Just, I had to, I didn't tell you over text, but I had to tell you live. I was confident, especially going into Sunday. I threw down quite a bit of money on DraftKings on you and, to win. So I know I did this last time. I remember last time we talked, I was like, cause I want to be a part of this. So it's okay. It's good. I'm going to make it back. We'll make it back on the next one. So next time you really feel like you feel it, let me know. A little insider trading. I'll make sure I throw some extra down.
Oh, darn it, Shane. I hate that for you.
It was too funny not to share.
I hate it for both of us, but I hate it for you too.
I mean, come on. It's okay. You came out all right. It wasn't like,
I came out more than good. And, obviously Spieth missing that little putt in the last hole.
Yeah, hell yeah, right? That was nice.
I mean, obviously, you root for yourself, but, like, I genuinely don't really root against anybody. And there's not anybody on tour that I'm like, I don't even really like. Like, everybody's fine. Everybody's nice. There's some people that, you know, maybe you wouldn't want to go have dinner with every week or hang out with all the time. But, like, everyone's generally nice, and Spieth is probably the nicest
one. Oh, wow. That's cool.
Probably even too nice. I mean, he would tell you that. So it was like a good feeling at the same time. And I'm like, gosh, I didn't want to get second play or solo second like that. It would have been way cooler. Yeah, I mean, obviously financially it was a good thing, but I wish he would have made the putt, as weird as that sounds. I didn't want to.
No, I mean, you're a good
like that. And it's not like I won, but I feel like I kind of still won.
Yeah.
It was a big week for us, cause now I can take a little more time off with, babies that will remain.
Hell yeah, man.
His name will remain unnamed.
Unnamed. We don't know the name yet.
Probably rolling her eyes in the background.
The one thing I wanted to go back to too, Adam, just because I find it so interesting, and I think I might have even told you this on a later podcast. It's so funny. If he ever listens, my high school golf coach, Rick Geip, I don't know if he's ever listened to this podcast. Probably not. But he drilled something into my head so hard that I still remember every time I play golf, and he was like, I don't care. I think I told you this before, but I don't care how you start the round. It's how you finish the round that matters. Like, he'd get so mad at me because at the Legends in Franklin, I historically would bogey the last two holes. I don't know what the hell it was. I just could never figure out the last two holes on the Creek Nine. And he just would get so mad. He's like, you had a great round and you bogeyed the last two holes. Like, you got to stop doing that. For you, like, that's how I always think. Like, when I see people like heading into the last hole, I'm like, I know as a competitor in golf back when I was a young kid, I had I didn't have a good mindset. That's something I've learned to get better at, but I didn't have a good mindset back then when it approached like those situations. What was that like for you? Like, stepping up to 18, Spieth's next to you, that place was loud and it was packed. What was that like? I'd love just to break that down for a second, 'cause I think it's really cool to just capture that.
Looking back, it went by so fast. Even like the last couple holes, I mean, obviously, Spieth hitting in the water. I made a nice par putt on 16, made a nice par putt on 17. Spieth hit one of the best golf shots. I mean, for him to miss, you know, a 5-6 footer, the greens were so fast, to be fair, and him to miss that putt on 17 and 18, unlikely. Do I know that he hit bad putts? He could have just as easily hit fine putts and then just have them not go in. I was just so fortunate to make like a, I don't know how far it was, 15-foot par putt on 17, and he misses a 5-footer. So like, that's a big swing. Like, if we run that simulation 100 times, I mean, he's going to beat me by 2 strokes a lot, because I'm going to miss mine. He's going to make his. And then 18, I don't feel like I didn't make that bad of a swing. I just towed it a little bit. And then I've hit two balls. I thought about this a lot, actually. I've hit two balls over there. I hit one 2 years ago, and one my first year I played the Valspar. And they were left on 18, the similar shot I hit, maybe even the same. And they were just fine. And I had a pitching wedge and a 9-iron and made par with both of them. And that was my mindset walking up to that ball, was like, all right, there's how many thousands of people on the last hole? It's, you know, feels like it's 8 deep on both sides. Like, you can't physically get a golf ball to go through 8 deep of people. You just can't. And it was well right of them. And some, obviously, bounced left. It was hooking, went through all the people. And I got up there and it's next to a tree. And I'm thinking that can't be my ball because it wasn't that far left. And there's all these people, that's not possible. And that was the biggest shock for me, was I had already in my mind known I'd hit it over there twice and made a fairly simple par. It's a hook around the trees, or I hit it up short of the green and chip it, putt it to 7-8 feet and have a great chance to get in the playoff. But then I saw it up against the tree. Obviously it was just more of a shock because I just was not expecting that. I didn't know that that was a possibility.
I remember when they kind of like got the cameras over there, I kind of thought the same thing. Like I don't think I got to watch your 18th hole live the day before. No, I didn't. So I didn't really know what it was like. When you hit it left, they didn't do a great job of explaining if that was a place you could save it from or not. And then when they walked up and showed the thing, I thought the same thing. It took me a second to be like, wait, he's right-handed. That's a problem. Did you, like, when you think through that, because I guess I've always thought, well, no, never mind. There's situations I feel like on tour where people take an unplayable and move it. And is that usually just because you have to take a stroke penalty, don't you? So did you consider that at all? Because that was such a wild shot. I want to get to it in a second. But what did you think when you walked up to the ball?
I did. And I knew, God, this sounds bad. I knew I couldn't make double on the last hole. I knew I needed birdie to win. It's just a tough pin to get to. So I knew I was going to, if I missed it, I tried to hit it in the left bunker, because the right bunkers are the only place where I could get in the lip and not be able to get it over the lip back on the green. So if I hit it in the left bunker, it's not going to be in the lip, and it's just a wedge or a 9-iron on the green, middle of the green, 2-putt, par. It's just not a birdie hole. It's actually easier if you're in the rough, and then you can land something on the green and have it roll up, because if you're in the bunker, it's going to spin. So you have to fly all the way back there. And then if you do that, you risk going long, which is terrible. So from the rough, you can play the flyer and it lands middle of the front of the green and rolls up. So it's actually an easier pin to be in from the rough. So that's why I was trying to miss it. If I missed it, like, I wanted it to be in the left bunker, the left rough, which sounds kind of weird. It's just a par hole. It's not a birdie hole. And I just missed left of the bunker. But that was just an unfortunate time to toe one. And it was my really only shot I hit like that all week. So I've been trying to get rid of that shot, and I did. I just needed to, I guess, get rid of it one last time. But who knows? It was so cool, and I was just fortunate to get out of there with a bogey because I was completely stymied. So,
yeah. I mean, when you, I'm not going to lie, when you all of a sudden walked up to the ball and you were swinging left-handed, I was like, mind blown for everyone that's listening and not watching. Like, I was like, is he really going to hit this left-handed? First of all, hats off to you for even having the ability to do that. That was super impressive. And then that shot was phenomenal, dude. It was
a lot of luck.
That's great. Do you practice that?
I don't. I might start, honestly. That's obviously a very useful shot to have if you need it. I've hit it maybe 2 or 3 times in a tournament. It's worked out every time. I will say this, though, short story. Indiana Open, Brickyard 1 year, maybe like 13. That was the first time I ever tried it. I was up against a fence, like par 3 on the back nine, like 13 or 14 or 15. I forget. Out of bounds left. I was up against the fence. I tried it left-handed. I like topped it off the cart path out of bounds.
So, oh, shit.
That was the first time I ever tried it. And I'm like, ooh, that was not good. And that actually, because I was I was bent over. I just couldn't believe where the ball was. And then I started thinking of, like, it pops up in my mind every time I hit a left-handed shot, which maybe like once every 2 years or twice a year, not often. It was just popping up in my mind, like, the first time I hit a left-handed shot, every time I hit a left-handed shot, that thought always runs through my mind of the top I hit out of bounds, because it was the first time I ever tried it. And I'm laughing at myself, like, well, if I top this one, like, at least it's not going out of bounds. And a funny thought that went through my mind.
So were you nervous before you hit that then? Just knowing that was in the back of your head?
No,
that's not a shot you practice?
I was most nervous about if I didn't hit it far enough, or if I topped it, it was going to be in the lip of the bunker, and then I probably would double. Because then I chunk it out from there in the fairway, and it's just a really tough shot to get close. So that was the only shot I was trying to avoid. If I knew I could get it across the bunker, I probably wasn't going to stop it in the fairway. And then it rolled in the rough, which was actually ideal. I would have rather had that ball in the rough where it was than in the fairway, which is kind of strange.
No, I mean, that makes sense. I was fired up for you. I was like, that was the best outcome you could have hoped for, probably, I would assume, right? I mean, the shot you actually hit.
I could have hit 100 balls there, and I don't know how many would have been just as good, but I couldn't have done much better.
Yeah, that was nuts. I know you got a lot of praise on the broadcast too. Just they were like, you swung the hell out of that too. You're like, I'm gonna break my wrist, break the club on the branch, whatever it takes to get this ball out of here. So it was crazy too. Like you looked so normal swinging it left handed. Like I assume if I swung something left handed, I'd look like a freaking dinosaur T-Rex arms, like trying to figure out how to swing.
I don't know about any of that. To be fair, it just as easily could have not worked out, and I could have hit the tree. Because, yeah. I mean, the problem was, like, my backswing, the tree was so close. I was really, from what I felt, I'd have to go back and watch the video. I haven't watched the final round, which I want to do at some point. But the tree was so close to my backswing. Like, if I missed an inch, you know, over the top, I would catch the tree and then go completely over the golf ball, which would have been really embarrassing. Because if I don't move the golf ball, then it's like, well, what do? Do you try it again? Or do you take mm-hmm. playable? Or, you know, I couldn't hit the ball right-handed. That was out of the question. So I'm just glad it worked out, and it could have been, it could have been blind luck. I don't know. It's probably a little bit of both.
Well, and then you got out there, and then, I mean, to be honest, dude, that putt at the end was so crazy. I couldn't believe you almost hit that. And the one question I got asked a couple times, and I was trying to think through your thought process, so I'd love to know, was leaving the pin in, do you think that was the right move? Do you think that actually stopped it?
It definitely stopped it. It would miss just right. Like, so it went mm-hmm. in like the right center of the hole. So it definitely would not have slowed down as much if I didn't have the pin in. So it hit the pin. It went to maybe 5 feet. It would have went to, I don't know, 7, 8 feet, probably maybe 10 feet. And from,
yeah, I probably would have gone pretty
even
far.
From where I was at 5 or 6 feet, I was just tapping the putt. It was so fast. It was basically just a lag. And hopefully it finds part of the hole because it's so fast. Like any spike mark, any imperfection in the green, if it starts rolling offline at that, as soft as I'm hitting it, it's going to, like if it hits a pebble, because that putt had to be like a 15 on the centimeter as downhill mm-hmm. as it was, it would have missed way left or way right if it gets going the wrong direction. It's like putting on like a pool table. And if you put like imperfections or little rocks on the pool table, if it hits something, it's really going to dart it offline moving as slow as it is. So.
Yeah, luckily, that makes sense.
I hit a good putt. It went right in the middle. And I was very fortunate to make bogey from where I started the hole, I'll say.
Yeah, that was like, honestly, it was obviously a bummer to get a bogey on the last one. But holy cow, that could have been so much worse. I would think even on the tour, most people would have had worse than a bogey on that hole, given where that hole started. And just like being up against the tree, like I was so impressed. I was like, dude, walking away with the bogey on that hole was a huge win.
It was. And that's what I generally do well. Like, I mean, I hit it pretty straight, but there's a lot of guys on tour that hit it much straighter than me. So I have to be pretty good at getting out of trouble situations. Obviously that's an extreme circumstance, but just making par when you get out of position, that's my caddy, David Cook. We do really well with that. That's where we excel of, how do we avoid making mistakes when we're out of position?
Got it. Yeah.
Stop compounding our mistakes when we're out of position. That's a really big part of playing good golf on tour. And Spieth is absolutely incredible at it.
So it's kind of like moving on, just get out of the situation, save what you can, and it's on to the next hole.
When you put yourself in a bad situation, how do you make par, or how do you give yourself the best chance to make par without doing something stupid to make yourself make double? And obviously when you get in good situation, you have to excel and make birdies, but it's just when you get out of position, how do you make par from there? That's what really separates, you know, the top players in the world, and themselves in those bad situations less. So it's kind of a double.
Right.
That's how they beat you two ways.
That makes sense, man. And then that last putt, I mean, so to tap it in for bogey, I can't remember, did you go before? No, Spieth finished, didn't he? So you hit your putt and then he finished.
I hit my putt and then he finished. I finished first.
Yeah. So for you going up to that putt, what was your mindset at that point?
We had it straight. I was just, if that putt missed, the next one was going to be a tap in for me. I wasn't having 5 feet for double. Like that wasn't going to happen. It was so fast. I just played straight, tapped it very slightly, and it rolled very, very nicely right in the middle of the hole. I don't like if that putt missed. I bet that putt would have went 4 or 5 feet by, even if it missed, just because of the sheer speed of the greens. And that's with me trying to lag it. So thankfully it went in. I didn't have to putt a 5 footer for double and then possibly miss it, make triple. Like that would have left a really, really sour taste in my mouth. And, you know, all from a drive that I didn't think it wasn't good, but it wasn't the absolute worst golf shot hit, you know, all week. I'd hit that shot a couple times in previous years, but I was relieved when it went in because then I knew I had tied, you know, for second place. And it was such a fast putt. Part of that, even to make that putt, was luck, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. Well, man, it was impressive. I wanted to say hats off. It was so fun to watch you, dude. It was cool to see on that stage and the resolve you had on that. Nine out of 10 people, I feel like playing that situation would have been so pissed and angry. You just like kept going to what you just said. You were like, you figured your way out of that hole, and it's a hell of a weekend, man. Second place, obviously a big paycheck. That's awesome. I'm so pumped for you. So that's exciting.
It was very cool.
That's awesome, dude. You'll have plenty more. You looked great out there. Like your swing and the putting and chipping. I guess that's one question I wanted to ask you today. For someone like me or someone listening today, that's, you know, just your average weekend golfer. I've always been the guy. I think we talked about this before. I'm like trying to get the driver long, hitting my irons a lot. And I was thinking the other day, I was talking to one of my buddies. I was like, I think this season for me being the weekend golfer, I'm just going to, when I go out and practice, like I can hit my irons, I can hit my driver. It's going to be inconsistent. I'm just going to go chip and putt most of the time. Like I'm just going to try to get really good at chipping and putting, really chipping probably more than anything this summer. Do you have any advice for people who are just like weekend golfers? Like where should you, if you have to pick one or two areas to really spend time practicing when you have like some time to play, what would you say is the most important?
That's a good question. Hitting it, I don't know. Hitting it far is so much more fun. And because like you're not playing for score, you're not playing for money. You're having some,
right?
You're needling your buddies. Like you're just having a good time.
Yeah.
Like I get the whole good, you know, go practice your chipping and putting, and that's important and you should. But, that's probably the least fun thing to practice and for someone like yourself or the weekend work.
Yeah.
So I get both sides of it. Like, yeah, you know, maybe go and do it, you know, once, I don't know, twice a month, I call it, go spend like an hour and a half or 2 hours in your chipping. But like, it's also the good thing about you is, you know, golf's supposed to be fun. So like, you're not out, you don't want to go out there and just spend, you know, 2 hours in your chipping and putting. Like you still have to get some enjoyment out of the game. So maybe like, you know, a good compromise, if you're going to go practice for 2 hours, you get on a Saturday when you're not playing or a Sunday afternoon, you have time, like, you know, go hit balls for an hour and a half or some, you know, hour 20, and then chip and putt for 30 minutes or something. That way you're not completely neglecting that side of the game, but you're also on the areas, in my opinion, that are probably more fun of like driver and the irons, where you're seeing more immediate results. Where like putting and chipping, I feel like sometimes I practice and then I'll do shit for 2 weeks. And I'm like,
sure.
Why'd I practice? Like if I'm just going to do that.
Yeah, what was the point? No, I love that answer actually. Cause that is, you know, all of my buddies who are just the weekend golfers are like, no, dude, I want to go out there and swing as hard as I can and see how far I can hit it. I'm like, yeah, but I want to shoot in the 70s. That is like, I want to be the older guy that's healthy and shooting 70s, and he's just doing it for fun and, you know, can turn out a good round.
Or like eating poorly and, you know, working out and eating healthy, like just about balance, like do the fun stuff, right? But then also, you know, have a little structure, not a lot, just enough where you're going to, you know, you're going to shoot some scores in 70s. You're good. So like, it's not as big a deal for you. Like you're pretty good.
Not as good as you're alluding to, but thank you.
I think you're pretty, I think we played once in college maybe. And, maybe
I actually have told this story before. I don't know if I've told you this story. Cause it's funny. I remember it vividly. Cause obviously you're the good golfer out of the two of us. So, you had told me you had played 36 holes that day, like with the team. You guys just played a bunch. It was like a Friday afternoon. So you had already played 36 and you had practice. So you'd like been chipping, putting, and you played 36 holes. It was like twilight hours. And I can't remember who I was playing with. Actually, it was Peyton. That's when you met Peyton. So I was playing with Peyton and somebody else. And you came out and joined us. And I'll never forget, we brought beers. So you cracked a couple beers and we were just talking as we teed off on number one at Purdue, the cheaper course.
Yeah.
And you just striped it. You just got up, didn't even think twice, striped it 25, 30 yards past any of us. Walked up. You couldn't have looked at that ball for more than 3 seconds and you pulled an iron out, put it within 5 feet of the hole, walked up, you were drinking a beer and just tapped it in.
Life's easy. Plan, I swear, man.
I tell you what, I'll never forget that, Adam, because I was laughing. I'm like over here, like left, right, left, sand, over in the woods, chip back on, four putt, pretty much. Well, that's funny, man.
I never birdied the first hole at Ackerman, so maybe it happened. I never did it in qualifying, at least, because there's out of bounds left. I always hit it like right, hit it in the bunker, and sanded on, and then two putt bogey. And coach is like, "How'd you bogey the first hole, Adam?" I'm like, "I don't know, coach. I'd suck. I don't know." But
it's funny. Well, we all have that one or two holes on one of our favorite courses that we suck at, right?
Open a beer, get in your happy place, just let it go. I mean, obviously, we get to practice, you know, even since college, since we've been practicing 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours a day, multiple days. So, you know, we are very good, but we should be pretty good. Like, you better be pretty good if you spend this much time practicing. Like,
that's a good point. Yeah.
You know, that's what
it's like anything else, right?
Kind of way I look at it sometimes. Or, you know, we are, you know, we're entertainers, some more entertaining than others. But being on the lesser entertaining of PGA Tour players. So I'm trying to, you know, like the lefty shot was cool. That, you know, surely provided some value. But just being able to go out there and do your thing and just, you know, not take it too seriously. I mean, at the end of the day, like, it's just golf. Like, what does it really even matter? Just go hit it. You're either going to succeed or you're not. And you learn from it and get better. Mm-hmm. And it's not a lot you can do beyond that.
Yeah, man. That's a good attitude, even for you at your level, because you got to love it, right? You got to keep loving it, enjoying it. And the more you love it, I'm sure the more time you want to spend on it and get better at it. And that's life. It's a long game. It's not a long sprint. It's a marathon. So
long.
As we're wrapping up, because I do got to, unfortunately, I got to jump to work stuff. But Adam, the one question I started asking guests at the end of the podcast that I would love to ask you, because you've been on here a couple times now. I think is this your third time on the podcast? You might be.
I think it's two.
Two? Okay. So this is a new one. I haven't asked you this before. The question is where you're at in your career, which, by the way, they mentioned how many tournaments you've played. And I was like, wow, he's been in a lot more tournaments than I even realized. You've been in, I think it was like 160 something. Does that sound right?
It's way more than you think it would be. It's gone by.
Yeah.
Fast. Unbelievable.
So that's why this question will be interesting. So for you, you've actually been on tour for, I would argue, a decent amount of time now, which is pretty cool to look back on, I'm sure.
You're six.
You're six, which is nuts, man. It's crazy how fast time's flown.
I can't believe it.
Over the first 6 years of being on the PGA Tour, and then obviously you're on the Korn Ferry Tour, and like your story with golf starts way back when you were a kid. Is there anything that's happened for people listening who are coming up that you would say you regret, or that was just a big opportunity and it's something you always think about and it like gives you motivation to get better?
That's a good question. So like a regret would be, you know, golf's just so different in the fact that like, and this is with most things in life, but especially true with golf, there's no linear success in golf. Like you can practice and get worse. Or you can practice your ass off for 2 or 3 months and not see the results for another 4 or 5 months. So you just have to, golf is the ultimate. You have to practice very diligently. You have to know what you're doing. You have to know what you're good at and play to your strengths. And the biggest thing in golf is eliminating mistakes. So when you can learn to eliminate mistakes, have a shot that you know what it's going to do when you're having a bad day off the tee, like a go-to shot. And I generally am a very good putter, a streaky putter, like we talked about, but that's a strength of mine right now. And at some point it will go away and I'll have to, you know, work hard for, you know, a month or a week or however long it might be. And it'll come back and it just comes and it goes. So I would say regret wise, not really any super regrets. There's one shot that comes to mind, you know, at Q school, from being like a big moment, I had to maybe play the last two holes one over to get through Q school. And it was maybe like 140 yards PGA National. The wind's blowing like 20, 25, 30 in your face, a little out of the left. And that's my least favorite wind. There's trouble everywhere at PGA National. I hit an 8-iron that got beat up by the wind a little bit. It's floating and it cleared the hazard maybe by 2 feet, 3 feet. And if that shot would have went in the water, I probably would not have gotten through Q school, and I could have been back on the Latin America tour. So like that, wow, that could have been my lucky break. And I think about it often, because if that shot would have went in the water, who knows if I would have even made the PGA tour, you know, six, next year will be year seven. Like none of that had to happen if I wasn't fortunate enough to have that good thing happen to me. So I think about that often, just because I just as easily, and this isn't me being negative, but maybe I don't get through Q school, I hit in the water, I struggle, I get, you know, I get tired of traveling Latin America and Central America, and I stop playing golf. That could have happened. I'm not saying it would have. I still believe in my ability and my process to still get to the PGA Tour, even if that ball goes in the water. But it just brings up the question of, it still could have went the other way. And that is that was a big shot for me in my career, which was back in 2015.
No. I love that.
Yeah, December 15. So
love that, man. It goes to show just like how many things in life actually are about timing and luck. And I feel that too with everything that has gone on my side of the fence. That's a good one, man. That's a really good piece of advice for people. I think it's to be grateful for where you're at and what's happened, because yeah, to your point, right? One shot could have been the difference of the whole trajectory of where you're headed.
You're right.
It's crazy to think. Very cool, true, man. Well, thanks for coming on, buddy. It was really good to see you. Great to talk a little bit more about the phenomenal tournament you had, and stoked for you and Courtney, buddy. It's going to be an exciting ride. When's the next tournament you're playing in with the baby coming? Do you know?
I'm playing next week at Hilton Head, and then I have the next 2 weeks off for baby time.
Okay. So awesome, man.
One more final tournament before it's for a family of three or family.
I'm so, don't forget bunker. I know that, I will tell you, that's one piece. Don't forget. That's a hard one. You're like baby. The poor dogs. I know Pete's like, yo man, I was the main center of attention. What's up now? Sure. They love the baby though.
Babies. Well, loves them.
Well, congrats, buddy. It was good to talk to you, and really fired up for you and Courtney. It's going to be the best thing ever. So,
thank you. How are things going with your job? With the
good man
company and whatnot.
Yeah, things are going really well. This is our technically year two of doing it full time. So it's really exciting. Definitely I would say a lot of brands, it's a tough time for brands trying to raise money right now with the economy. So we're kind of seeing that unfold a little bit of just a lot of food and beverage brands. It's just getting harder, I would say. So focus on profitability is becoming more important than it ever has been. And luckily that's what we do. I mean, that's really like what our ethos and selling point is brands that want to not only scale and grow, but grow profitably. That's what we're good at. So I think inevitably it's actually helped us to some degree, because I think we're actually helping brands, which is what we wanted to, what's what we set out to do, was to really change this agency space. Like there's just a lot of agencies in our space that I think they're more worried about their business model than they are about the brands they work with, unfortunately. So that's what we're trying to do different. So I would say we're definitely accomplishing that. And we're still trying to figure it out, just like you in golf, right? It's like never, I would say with business and starting a company, it's every day's different. Every day's got different challenges. There's lots of good days. There's lots of shitty days. So it's just like every day. I will say the one key thing that I've learned so far is it's no different, whether it's golf or business or whatever you're working on. It's just keep showing up. The lunges is what I always joke about. It's like, but your body doesn't give a shit about what you did yesterday or what you're gonna do tomorrow, but get it done today. It's kind of the same mentality with business. It's like, just keep showing up, show up every day, keep trying.
I don't know. I mean, you probably don't know this. Maybe you should know this. You're an animal. Like every day I see that and I'm just like, and I'll be honest. Like I'll say this in the pod. Like, I'm like, yeah, I'm lazy. I'm not ashamed. I can't, I mean, I could do that, but like, I'm too lazy and I'm not.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Like, I'm too lazy. Like, I could do it, but kudos to you. And you had an injury and you had surgery. What did you have surgery on?
I got a deviated septum fix. So I had a nose surgery, which was a bummer from the lunge perspective, but I can breathe fully now. I can take deep breaths. Now it's septum. Easier.
How did that happen?
Baseball and basketball injuries. So I got a line drive to the face and then a headbutt in fifth grade basketball that like broke my nose. So I had two nose breaks. And then I have bad, like allergies anyway, and inflammation from like gluten. Same. And wheat. And so what would happen is my septum was basically, if you're watching, instead of it being your nose is typically a straight line, mine had like a double kink to it. And so they basically went in there and like straightened it all out and like took all this shit in there that was inflamed. I'm a baby, but it sucked. It was a shitty surgery, and it took, you know, I would say like the first 5 days were rough, but it's the best thing I ever did. If you have any nose problems, highly recommend.
I felt bad for you, and I was like, man, his lunch streak is coming to an end. Not because of he's not doing it. Like it should almost be like your lunch streak should still count, because days that you were medically able to do it, you've done it.
You're going to laugh at this. And I don't think I've said this on the podcast, but I actually like pushed my surgeon. I was like, I know you think people can't do things when they have like the surgery, but I'm telling you, like, I'll be fine. And he was like, he was going on and on about do not get your heart rate up. And I was like, I know, but I like, trust me, like I'll be fine. Like most people are a little soft in life, and I'm telling you, like, I'll be fine. I do this all the time. And he was like, I'll make you a deal. You can lunge. Come to the parking lot and do it, because you're going to bleed out and I'll need to call 911. So just be close to me when you do it.
So he, you can't.
So I was like, okay, fuck it. Fine. I'll stop the lunge streak. And you know, it's funny. It ended up being okay, because what it taught me too was that was something I was really proud of, but it also shows that like you can re-fucking start it. Just keep going. Like, again, it's the same thing I just said, like, just keep going. And what it's been good is I think a lot of people actually have started doing, like, they've realized that like, it's not, dude, it's 20 minutes. I know it is hard. It's definitely very, very hard. But what it's taught me is like, just if you want to accomplish something, like find time, make time. Yep. Like today we were doing this podcast and I got to do some work stuff here in a minute. And I was like, I'm not gonna be able to work out at my normal time. So I just got up earlier. I don't know. Just figure it out or do it later.
Everything good will come to an end. This too shall pass and you'll have to start over.
Exactly. Yeah. Get a new goal. I know I have a new goalpost though. I'm having a guy on here soon who, he's adamant on the lunge. He's been doing the lunges. He had been doing a little bit longer than I have. And there's a Guinness Book of World Records that he broke. So it's a mile of lunges for time. And his time is so crazy. I'm like, okay, now I have a new goalpost. So like me typically doing 800 meters, which is two laps around a track, takes me, if I'm flying, it's like 14:45. That's like my fastest I've ever done. 14:43 is my record. And then typically 20, like between 15 and 20.
I was going to say, I always remember being like right at 16, or a lot of yours are right at 16 minutes. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. And so what I'm doing some days is I know how far 800 meters is in my garage, like from the end of my driveway to the front of my driveway to the back of my garage. So there's some days where I'll just do it there, and I'll use like weights, or I'll do something else with it to kind of variate it. But I know, so I roughly know the distance. He did four laps in just under 24 minutes. It's fucking incredible. It's like he's flying.
I took my dog on a walk two nights ago, and there was a mailbox. I'm like, it's like, I don't know, 50, 60 yards. I lunged to it. And my legs were so,
let's go.
I got there and I'm like, Shane does this for 800 meters. Oh my gosh. I'm like, you know how big how strong my legs would be? I feel like, I'm like, even today, like, I'm still sore from doing 60 yards of lunges. I mean, it was a long,
I love it. It's a long way. I mean, think about just what it's going to turn into on swing speed. When we get the lunge streak going, you're gonna start doing lunges on the putting green. We're going to have the PGA Tour out there lunging. I can see this going in the right way.
Well, I just wanted to say that that's very admirable, and you're an animal. Like, you are. Sorry.
I appreciate it, buddy. I appreciate it. Well, next time you're, we'll have to figure out time. I would love to meet up at some point. It'd be good. We could do lunges, go play a couple holes, hang out, have a beer.
It'd be fun.
We'll have to figure something out once the babies are all at a good age.
Once we get settled in and get a little further down the road, we, like I said, Courtney lived in Chicago for 6 years.
Yeah.
So it's, I like it up there. She loves it up there. But we will definitely, we'll come visit and then at some point have you guys down. We'll do something fun. Be good.
Let's do it, man. You're always welcome. So awesome, buddy. Well, I got to run. Thank you for coming on, and, best of luck, man. I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for, all right. Me on. And Kelly is good, right?
She's doing great. Yeah. She's a rock star.
Your son's name.
Grayson. Yeah.
Good man. Good man. All right. Well, hope they're well. I'll talk to you again soon.
All right,
you already did your lunch streak?
I did this morning. Yeah, we're good to go. I think we're on day 64.
So are there some, I mean, do you get tired anymore of doing them? I'm saying not tired of doing them. Do your legs get tired while you're doing them?
Oh, yeah. I did a full out 2 days ago. I went as fast as I could for the first time in a long time, and I'm dying today. So, yeah. Oh yeah.
So that it's still coming. You go all out the next day and you have to come back and do it. Cause like I've ran like 4 or 5 miles before, like hard, obviously that's not really an athlete at all, a golfer. And the next day I'll like try and go run a mile to flush it out. The lactic acid or whatever people say, I have no idea, but I can't run. I'm like, I'm tired. My legs are so heavy. I'm so weak. And I can't imagine lunging 800 meters as fast as you can and then doing it the next day. That had to be really hard. Like really
hard. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. I would tell you I've learned that instead of like giving myself time off, doing lighter, slower movement of the thing that made me sore, 100 times better.
Flush it out.
Like when I ran that marathon, my knees were destroyed in the fall. I just lunged. And then the next day I went out and did a mile and just jogged. And I felt way better because you get blood flow back in those muscles that got all constricted. That's my method.
I didn't know you ran a marathon. What was your time?
Tough subject. The goal was sub 4. I thought I was on pace for 3:59 and I ran a 4:02. So it's still good. Still a big win. Went from 5:35 in 2017 when I ran New York to 4:02 here in Chicago. So I got to do it again because I got to break 4 hours. What'd you say?
When's your next marathon?
Haven't signed up yet. I got to figure that out.
What about like what are they called? Ultraman or what do they call it?
It's a little far. I don't know.
I know. What are they called? Ironman. That's what they're called.
Ironman. I mean, it'd be fun to do one. I'm not a huge biking guy or swimmer.
I think.
And it would require a lot of that.
I think the seed has been planted right now.
All right. Adam Shank said it on the podcast.
Crazy shit. That's some crazy shit that crazy people do. And you're crazy.
Yeah, it is. I'm pretty crazy. So that might work.
Crazy's good.
All right. You said it here first. If it happens, Adam was the seed that planted that tree.
I think you'll do it at some point because you're challenging yourself is amazing. And I mean, you lunge 800 meters for, I don't know, 1,000 days in a row, whatever you get up to.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Let's keep your nose fine and then we can break that tree.
Sounds good, man. I will. Well, good talking to you, buddy. I appreciate it, man. Right. And we'll talk soon. Right. I appreciate all the kind words.
You're a man. See you, Shane.
All right. You are too, buddy. See you, man.